for me and for a lot of people, and I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's like getting out of ourselves and putting the focus on other people and the connection that we can create there. That's much more of a driving force of an energy. And what I've noticed is that our state changes how we think, right? So we can be in a like low energy state, and then we have these thoughts like, oh, nothing matters, and there's like I'm worthless, and like blah blah blah, this is not going to be like blah blah. And then you show up for a coaching call and you're connecting with people, and all of a sudden you think much better thoughts, right? Our state creates our thoughts.
Welcome to the Grant Owen Podcast, where we explore the world of entrepreneurship. Join us as we dive into the nitty-gritty of what it takes to start, grow, and scale a successful business. We're on a mission to share our experiences, failures, insights, and advice with others. Whether you're just starting out in your entrepreneurial journey or you're looking to take your business to the next level, tune in and join the conversation about what it takes to succeed in the world of business. We going for- Welcome to the Grant Owen Podcast. My name is Grant Owen, and today I have Calvin with me. I am so excited. I am super, super excited because Calvin has a vast amount of experience building communities because he has a tool that is incredible, and I can't wait to show it to you and talk about it. But we're also going to be diving into, I actually have no idea where this conversation is going to lead, and it makes me really excited because I have a lot of questions about Calvin's background, where he's been, what he's doing, what he's interested in. And a lot of cases, it's like his mission. He's very vocal about his mission and what he's doing in the future. So I really want to dive into it. So Calvin, thank you so much for spending your time with me. Thanks for giving me your energy today.
Hey man, Grant, I'm so excited to be here. And especially because you've like just in the little pre-chat we had, I've already learned a bunch of things, so
I'm glad
from being here already. So like people who are listening to you on a regular basis, they're really good off, I'm sure.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So let's dive in. Can you give me like just a little bit of a background? Because a lot of the people that are listening to this, they're either business owners or they're in that entrepreneur stage. And when I say entrepreneur, it's like, they usually are thinking about some kind of like side hustle. They've been thinking about like, they have this desire to be like, I want to get started. I want to do something, but I lack the courage to do it. And I like hearing from business owners and their story of that first leap. So can you tell me a little bit about that, like that initial leap you took, being like, I'm going to do this myself. What did you leave? What did you head towards?
Ah, yeah. Well, so I was lucky in the sense that my parents were both programmers, and my dad taught me how to code from when I was 5 years old. And so I started side hustling as a programmer when I was a teenager. And this was pre-internet. This is, I'll be 50 next week. So this is like,
oh my gosh,
early,
dude.
Early 80s.
Oh yes. My good. Look at you don't look fifth. It's like, you're like a Jared Leto, bro. Like that's crazy. Yeah. That's unbelievable. That's awesome. Good for you.
For real. Yeah. No, so yeah, so it was like early 80s before the PC was invented. I was programming. Yeah. My mom started the software company actually in 1980. My dad was also a business owner. He bought a company and ran that. So I was born into an entrepreneurial family. So it was a natural move for me to start a business. But as an adult, I got a job in, I'm born and raised in Denmark, but I got a job in Boston for a software company there. And I didn't want to move to Boston, so I insisted on living in New York. So I actually started working remotely in 1999.
Nice.
And have pretty much been doing remote work since then.
Nice.
And then after 2.5 years in the U.S., we moved back to Copenhagen. And that's when I started my first real company as an adult for real. And it was actually a very, very easy start for me because I came out of working for an open source software company, and I took some clients with me, not from that company, but clients companies in the community that was using that software.
Yeah.
And I had made a good name for myself in that community. So like my first client was MIT and Greenpeace International and kind of institutions like
gracious.
That. So
yeah. Okay. Awesome. That's crazy.
It went pretty smooth. Yeah. But I mean, it was really exciting actually. Cause it was like, there's a 3 year period, 3 month period where I started my first company and like as an adult and, or like full-time company and did really well. And I quit smoking and I proposed to my girlfriend and we set a date for the wedding. I was like,
wow,
I'm going to propose and we're on the one condition that we're going to get married within 3 months max. Yep. Like I didn't That's want awesome. To be like a long drawn out thing. That's and so awesome. I totally felt on top of the world.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. So tell me, cause like that, I describe that as like the honeymoon phase. Mm-hmm. Because there's like that freedom feeling. I'm saying this, I'm pretty new into my business, but like I felt that honeymoon phase. And then it was like kind of at like 3 to 6 month part where I was like, oh shit. Okay. I got to get, like, this is a real thing and this is going to be actually harder than I thought it was. So tell me about that. What was that first snag you hit? What was like that kind of wake up call?
Yeah, it hit me really hard. It was about a year in. Actually, I'm realizing now I confused the dates because I married her the next year. So I didn't get married that year, but still. So that year after I finished the first year strong, and then I gathered an advisory board meeting, and that was in 2003. And I was like, all right, it's going awesome. I just won a Startup of the Year award. That was when I had just trying to figure out the dates. Yeah. So I think we were like, yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. That advisory board meeting, 5 super smart people, all about like, how do I grow this company? And then afterwards, one of the guys looked me straight in the eyes and he was like, dude, we've been here for 3 hours and I still don't know what you want. Hmm. And it's a very like simple question, but inside of my head, it just said, it went like,
yeah.
Cause I was like, wait, like, I just want to grow a big company. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then it was like, wait, you're allowed to want something in business? Like business doesn't have to just be like, what's the strategy and the spreadsheet and the things. Yeah. I literally thought that you had to check yourself at the door when you did business. Like there's no room for you, who you are. Right. It was just the thing. And then once that landed, it clicked for, I don't know what I want. Hmm. I have zero clue what the fuck I want. And I realized I can't feel myself. Like it's all up here. And that was, I'd been running around and asking people and consultants and like, what should I do? But I didn't have any connection. I was cut off from here on down. I had no access to my feelings. I couldn't feel anything. And so I had no idea what I wanted. So that was when it really hit me. It's like, oh shit. Like, this is a whole different can of worms. There's not going to be someone who just tells me what I should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you find that you were kind of on that path because it made the most sense at that point? Was that kind of what you're saying is like, you just continue to follow it because the steps kept lining up and it was like, these are just that's the most natural progression from a logic perspective.
I mean, so starting the company, that was like an easy, obvious thing, right? Cause I was working with that software, I was doing software. So that lined up, but then once I was in, the thing was what I did was I started a consulting firm, a services firm, right? So I hired some of the other engineers from that community and built a small firm. And I think it was like 13 people at the peak building for these clients. But that was never my dream. I wanted to be a product company. I wanted to have something that was scalable. And that was a huge struggle for me because like I was always the backseat driver, like with my clients being like, oh, that's stupid. And if it was me, I would do this. And like, this would be much smarter. Right. And then when it's your own, you're like, oh shit, this stuff is hard.
Yeah.
Like, what should this be? I don't and literally like when you're not really in touch with your feelings, you can't do that. Like, they've done years ago when they're less humane, like they would sever the connection between the left and the right hemispheres. And then people can't decide what socks to put on or what to eat for breakfast. Because at the end of the day, all decisions are emotional decisions. Mm-hmm. And when your left brain, your logic brain don't have access to your emotions, which are in the right brain, you can't make any, like people just get paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the world that I was running in. So there was like it kicked off a journey of, therapy and coaching and spiritual teacher, all kinds of things to learn to get in touch with who I am.
Hmm. Yeah. So spirituality's, let's dive into that. Cause spirituality seems to be a big core part of your life. Was that something that came from your background with your parents? Was that something that was taught, learned? Did you kind of fall into it? Like, where did you align with it?
The pattern in my family growing up was that my mom was the spiritual person and my dad was kind of the business person. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified of my dad because he had this temper. Mm. And so I would run to my mom for protection from my dad when he was angry, but she could never protect me. And so I created this, and my mom's modeling was that she would read these books like, what's her name? So Wayne Dyer and, you know, Richard Baclucians, and there's another, what's her, like, visualization lady, Shakti Gwain, and okay. books like that, like the early yeah. stuff. But she would hide them from my dad.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that pattern with me of like doing it, but hiding it and being embarrassed about it. But also for many, many years, I decided like all that spiritual, I was very kind of spiritual as a kid. Like I had this feeling that I could see through people in a way, like
yeah.
when everybody's like, oh, blah, 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 stop doing that. You shouldn't like that. I'm like, no, he's doing that because he's hurting inside. Like he's yeah. feeling like this is going on inside of him. That's why he's doing it. And like, don't yeah. blame him for that. Don't like, but as I became a teenager, I unconsciously decided, well, the spiritual side can't save me when it really counts. So I can't mm-hmm. trust it. And so I shut that down and just went into that like business mode. Hmm. And I had so much resistance on it, like on the whole quote unquote spiritual stuff. So like I just became so analytical and so logical, and like programming was like my refuge. I was also terrified of humans because they would bully me and say stuff. And so computers yeah. became my safe space.
Yeah. I'm actually curious about that because I actually, just for clarification, where do you fall spiritually? I'm sure it's evolved and ups and downs over the course of the last, you know, 20, 30 years, but where do you fall? Like, what do you believe in?
The way I think of it is spirituality done right is just reality. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's reality and then there's spirituality. It's reality. So the way I see it is that we pretend like Einstein didn't happen. We pretend like we still live in a Newtonian world most of the time. Mm-hmm. And like energy doesn't really exist, or, you know, intention or love for that matter. Like we yeah. do acknowledge love, but not really in a way where we like take it seriously or think about what it really means. Right. Like yeah. I joke that America as a nation is so firm in their belief that there's only three dimensions and we're going to fucking dominate those. Yeah. It's yeah. like, you know, so where I land spiritually, like is what's true. Like I'm not religious. I think all religions are essentially based on a spiritual truth that has then become institutionalized, and now it's kind of become fossilized in a way. And there's many sections and directions, and there are lots of people doing amazing stuff within religion. But if we look at like religion per se, it's kind of like fossilized, you know, yeah. fossilized from what was there originally. So yeah, it's like love, energy. The way I think of it is like, I remember reading years ago in Gandhi's autobiography that he said, God, love, and truth are all synonyms. Right? God, love, and truth. And I see it as like that. And I would add a bunch of other words to that list. But it's like to me, I think of it as like everything in the universe is alive. Everything in the universe is connected, is all one. And like that mysterious force that keeps atoms together, I would call that love, for lack of a better word, or God. Hmm. Or truth. Yeah.
Interesting. I like that a lot. I mean, it's poetic in a lot of ways. I think to tie that into what you were talking about before, I find that most people, when they can't fall on a foundation of spirituality, they mm-hmm. do, and I find this myself, we do kind of fall into regiment, because that makes mm-hmm. sense to us. Like we fall into, okay, everything's gone to shit. Right. Everything sucks. All right. Mm-hmm. I need to go back into where I feel safe because it's what I can control. And I think that's a thing for entrepreneurs as well, because what I found, at least with especially successful people, I would say successful entrepreneurs specifically, because I don't want to, I don't know about necessarily in the corporate space, but like successful entrepreneurs, they most acclaim a deep sense of spirituality, because maybe through their journey and through their perception of the world of like, what impact can I have? There almost always is a spiritual tie to it. A spiritual, like, I want to make an impact in this because I feel called to it. Like, I feel like a yearning for it. And then when rubber hits the road, there's this like, ah, I can't rely on something else to make it work. I got to get my hands dirty and make it happen myself. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to hear you say that, because I've experienced that myself, where it's like, you know, my perception of God, I'm like, I would love to just lean on God and let God, right? But like, it makes more sense to me to be like, nope, get my hands dirty, make it happen. And, and not rely on him. And there's a balance in between that I'm trying to figure out and trying to discover for myself of like, no, I can let my foundation be true and not have that impact the truth that everything else is still happening despite my experience. Like everything in the spiritual realm, everything in this reality is still good, even if what I'm currently feeling is not good. And I'm curious
how would what you're not feeling be not good?
There's the fleshly answer that's like, I am the center of the universe answer. It's the prideful, very self-absorbed, if I don't feel peace, there is no peace. And I think it's like that, that was my inclination in naivety, where it's like, I can only be happy when I feel happy. Not I can feel peace because there is peace. And I think learning, like I'm just going to be in an evergreen process of trying to learn self-control of like mind, of like self-control in my spirit, of being like, I feel peace despite whatever circumstances, positive or negative. Peace is possible, you know, hope is possible. Truth is possible. Versus like, you know, you stub your toe, you get really pissed. You know, so there's like, you can draw that out in so many different ways.
I think a core thing is whatever you're feeling, like enjoying, appreciating that, right? Like I had that when I went through my divorce in 2011, there was a period where it was like we'd been together for 14 years. We had kids together. And there's a period where it was like the bottom fell out of my life. And I would walk down the street, just walk down the sidewalk and just burst into tears and like just crawl to my knees and just sit there and like bawl my eyes out. And it was painful as fuck, but it was exquisite at the same time, right? There's like a rawness. It was so beautiful. And I remember having that thought of like, is this ever going to end? Like, this is like, when is this over? I can't, like, it's hard, but also like, this is amazing. I haven't felt this alive and this raw in such a long time. And it's fucking amazing. And both were present. I was like, remember, enjoy this. And then like one day, I think it lasted about 3 months, and one day, like, boom, it was gone. And I just felt like normal again. And I was like, oh my God, had I known that that was going to happen, I would have savored it even more, because it's fucking beautiful. And I think that's a huge point, is like, whatever you're feeling is amazing, right? Because that's the whole point of life, is to feel. And that's why we do anything, is to have feelings. And you're not going to get all just happy, happy like feelings without the other stuff. But you can have joy be the container appreciation, love, be the container for whatever you're feeling, whether it's anger or grief or rage or like ecstatic or arousal or like whatever it is, you can be the container for all of it and still be in love and enjoy and in bliss behind it all.
I like that, because I think you're harping on this thing called self-control, which is, I think, something that a lot of people lack. And even, you know,
quick here, because it's not control, it's acceptance, right? Because what most people do, and there's a lot of like, I was talking to this monk at some point. He was an investment banker, and then he turned monk and done some speaking, and he was talking about how he would use meditation to make his feelings go away, right? When he was like, he got really pissed off, and someone was like, let me meditate, so make this anger go away. No, don't do that. Invite the anger in and just embrace it, because what's beautiful about feelings is that they pass through you in like 90 seconds, and then it's a new feeling. Yeah. When you let them, but we've all learned not to let us feel the feelings. And now it becomes like a mood, and then it becomes eventually a disease and all of that.
Yeah.
So it's more the allowing and the inviting in and the enjoying. And while you're doing that, having that tiny space between the feeling and I, who you are. So you're not identifying with it. It's not, I am angry. It's like, whoa, like I'm feeling all this anger inside of me.
Yeah. Why? I mean, yeah, I like that a lot, because I mean, and so especially in my upbringing, I was thinking a lot of like, it's almost, there's a negative connotation with the world. It's like the world is broken. It's a broken place. There's so much pain. There's so much hurt. And it's almost nihilistic, and then there's the but God aspect of it. But God is the solution. But God brings the foundation. But God, God brings the meaning.
And it's so misunderstood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And because for me, I'm like, there's so much negative that's promised: pain, suffering, hurt, tears, sickness, death. Mm-hmm. But joy is an option in the midst of all those. And I think you're touching on that because you're communicating. I communicated as self-control to choose joy. You're communicating as acceptance to choose joy. And I think that's really profound, because it's like self-control is like, it can almost be like obligation. Like, okay, I'm going to choose joy. But what you're saying is like, no, I'm actually going to feel this. I'm going to let it
joy
exist.
Joy is there. And joy is always there. It's just your thoughts. And you believing your thoughts that keep you away from that realization.
Yeah. Yeah.
The joy is already there. The love is already there. Right. So that's like, you know, I went through this process of self-love, and the key realization there is that the self-love is already there. It's just that I'm running a pattern that prevents me from actually experiencing that because I'm judging myself and I'm making myself wrong. I'm like, I should be, I'm not good enough, all that stuff, right? And I was afraid if I let myself feel love for myself then, or receive love from others, then I would stop improving to get to the point that I had to become so I could be worthy of love. And it's such a flawed way of thinking. And so the key there for me was realizing that it's not about me trying to love myself, right? It's not me trying to accept. Is me being willing to love myself. And in that willingness, that opens the space where the love naturally appears. And then that starts to kind of push away the thoughts. But our mind is going to think whatever the fuck it thinks. Right? We really don't have a lot of control over that. So like, we can't control our thoughts. What we can control is to what degree we believe in the thoughts that are in our heads. But it's always our thoughts that cause us suffering. It's never the reality. The world is perfect. I interviewed one of my favorite teachers is Byron Katie. I interviewed him some years ago and asked the question of like, Katie, if you were queen for a day, what would you change and why in the world? Right? If you had absolute power, what would you change and why? And very characteristically, she says, I am and nothing. Like, I'm already the queen of the universe, right? And I wouldn't change a damn thing. And I love that. Like, especially like, I'm super passionate about politics. Most people approach it as like, this is wrong. Like, it shouldn't be. And we need to right this wrong and all that stuff. And I get that from like a movement and a marketing perspective and all that stuff. But I think it's super flawed. Like, I think we need to look at it as, or we don't need to do anything, but I think the better way to look at it is that everything's also already freaking amazing. And I feel an impulse to contribute something, because that's how we are as human beings. We have that impulse to give, because we have something to give out of love, not out of like righteousness or anger or this is wrong or this is broken or fear. Like, oh shit, if I don't do this, like, the world is going to end in 12 years and we're all going to boil to death. And like, you know, that's not a good approach.
Yeah.
Because all it does is it creates more suffering, more pain, more division, more hatred, more anger, more violence.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out which tangent I want to follow. I feel like I want to bring us back, because I feel like I could go on a politics tangent, and that probably wouldn't be helpful for listeners as much as talking directly to business owners that are probably feeling overwhelmed. I want to ask, because I think we're along the same lines, and I think your journey kind of correlates with it, of like this process of understanding why you do things. Recently, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've expanded my why so much, because I think like what I've been told and what I resonate with is like, I want to make my vision big enough that other people can fit theirs inside of it.
So
I've added people to my team, and you know, as I've expanded my family, right? It's like I have a lot of accountability to now motivate me to push forward, because it's not just like, what do I want? It's like, okay, I just had a one-on-one with this person on my team, and they said that they want to, you know, do this. And it's just, they want to go to Italy. They want to, you know, they want to, you know, be making X amount. They want to buy a house. They want to do, and I'm like, okay, I have to make the business big enough so that they can fit that inside of it. And I'm curious, like, that can also be extremely overwhelming for someone, a solopreneur or someone that has a team. It can feel overwhelming to be like, it can be a lot of pressure. And I'm actually curious about how you've handled that. And you were talking about, you know, expanding the team, going from a services perspective, consulting perspective, then, you know, trying to shift over to product perspective, infinitely scalable. What themes have you resonated within those that has helped you make peace with your why in the process of doing it, so you're not just feeling overwhelmed the whole time?
Okay. How big is your team now?
Contractors. I have some contractors, but we're up to 30. I have six full-time people, actually. Sorry.
All right. Cool. And so, yeah. So what is your struggle with it? I think that might be a better way in here.
There's abundant mindset and there's scarcity mindset. And I think those two things are kind of, I tend to function well when I feel like my back's against the wall. And so I find, I've even found in this, like, you know, the first 2 years of this business, I consistently am putting my back against the wall because I tend to thrive in that versus making, I've been told like, I don't make pro money decisions. I make pro people decisions. And, I've been advised that I probably need to start making more pro money decisions.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's great. Yeah. That's helpful. I can totally relate to that, you know, 1,000%. I think it's human so the growth of the business is always connected with the growth of the founder leader, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how, like, what do you need to do to grow yourself as a person? Yeah. That, like, it's very normal for humans that we grow when we're forced to it, when we're in pain, right? We don't get our toothache fixed until it's actually really fucking painful, usually,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
So it's kind of normal. It also sounds like an away from motivation, like, oh shit, now it's going to be, I have to do something because like I overcommitted on finances or shit or something, right? Like, let me put myself in a situation where it's like, oh shit, so I have to. And then we get comfortable and we're like, oh, it's fine. Like, I don't need to do anything, right? Yeah. So Yeah, that's why I think, and that's, so it's a great train of thought there of like, what is the why? Because if like that, yeah, that motivation, that's obviously not going to be sustainable long term, right? Mm-hmm. You can keep going there and just create, like, it's funny. Did you see the Mike Jordan series, The Last Dance?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, like Michael Jordan would like pick a fight with someone, even if it was just in his head, every time to like psych himself up. Right. It was like, yeah, he would get offended. He would like pretend like someone had slighted him, even though they didn't. Usually there would be someone, but like that was his drive. Right? He's like, I'm gonna fucking show them.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's one way to do it. What I like to think, and actually I was coaching my group on this exact thing this just 2 days ago, is a lot of people have a why that's like big and broad and sounds good, and maybe it's something that they communicate, but what you really care about is how does the energy of that feel like to you? Mm-hmm. Like, what is really your why? Like, and if it's not to stay away from the poorhouse, or prove your dad wrong when he said that you couldn't, or those kinds of negative motivations, like, what is the out of love why that actually really motivates you? For one of my clients, it was like, they're a couple, they're helping people, corporate leaders, kind of bring more heart, honestly, to their leadership. That's not what they say exactly, because that's not how you talk in those circles, but that's kind of what they're doing. And his why, their why were different for him and her, but for him, it was about helping those guys who were stuck in that corporate world and it felt like so cold and isolated, help them feel more connected and feel more love. And that was really meaningful to him in a way that he could feel it. And that's what I want, like, find a why that's like in the future, that's about contribution and love, that you can really feel. Like, you can feel the energy of it. When you say it to yourself, you actually get energized from it. Right? That's the key. And for me, it took me a while to realize I get energized from intimacy, which is why I love the podcasting as a way to connect with people, right? We can have an intimate conversation rather than like creating funnels and like ads, like all that stuff, right? Like so for me, like creating those moments of intimacy really drives me, and I can be super down. And then like I had that, actually that same day I woke up for some reason, I was just feeling super down. I've been going, I told you before, like I've been going through like peeling away some deep layers of like that, like inadequacy, not enoughness that we all have. And there's like, something that came up around that. And so I woke up on Wednesday morning feeling like I don't want to, like, can I just stay in bed? I don't want to meet anyone. I don't want to have to do with anyone. It's like some like old dread was just like really coming up. And then I had in the same like 2 hour span, I had a live teaching with a challenge that my team is running. And then after I had my coaching call, and after that, like I was feeling amazing. Right. So is that like, for me and for a lot of people, and I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's like getting out of ourselves and putting the focus on other people and the connection that we can create there. That's much more of a driving force of an energy. And what I've noticed is that our state changes how we think, right? Mm-hmm. So we can be in a like low energy state, and then we have these thoughts like, oh, nothing matters, and there's like I'm worthless, and like blah blah blah, this is not going to be like blah blah, you know. And then you show up for a coaching call and you're connecting with people, and all of a sudden you think much better thoughts, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Like our state creates our thoughts.
Yeah. I resonate with that so much, because I think like whenever you are spending towards other people, whether it's your team or whether it's clients or whatever, that strength giving aspect has to draw from something. And so I think that's, for me, like, that's where the spirituality really comes in. It's like, you know, I try to make a practice of, like, before I go on a call, I'm not great at practice, I have to be transparent, but, like, I try to make a practice. My dad told me to make this practice where he says, like, pray beforehand, meditate, pray beforehand, and pray for that call, pray for that person, pray to be present in that. And that process has been so helpful, again, because it's like, what I feel does not have to dictate how I act. And the sense of, like, I'm going to receive so that I can give, I walk away with so much more energy because I, you know, like, it, because I, the fulfillment I feel when it's like, I've helped, the fulfillment I feel when it's like, I've given, someone took, and there's an impact made. That's so much more than I felt whenever I worked corporate or whenever I kind of siloed myself in my, like, in my own little corner of, like, I'm just going to work and grind and get my stuff done. When did you start?
I think that's exactly how that works, right? Yeah. That's the beauty of the work that, like, the work we get to do is we become the vehicle, the channel through which whatever this mysterious energy that we call life flows.
Yeah.
And it feels amazing.
Yeah. So when did you transition from one business to multiple businesses to coaching on top of it? Was that, did that happen organically just over the time of it?
I was trying all these different ideas, to try to create a product company. And that, then, like, this, that question that I mentioned before at the advisory board meeting led me on this self-discovery journey that 5 years later manifested in me. Like, I still hadn't really answered the question of what I want. And then one evening in late February 2008, I finally decided to sit down and figure it out. And it was like, we just bought a house, moved into a new house, and we couldn't afford it. And, like, furniture was a mess. There's still handyman there. Like, my wife had taken the kids to some warm place. It was the middle of winter. Boiler had run out of oil. Like, it was a complete shit show. And I was like, and then, oh yeah. And then we were like, the one client that had been paying all the bills for a couple of years had fired me. And at that point I'd scaled the company back to just me. And then the three other projects that were in contract stages and actually signed, they just like exploded. Nothing happened. And I was like, crap, like, I'm broke. I can't afford this house. What am I going to do? Like, it was like really terrifying. And I was like, all right, maybe this is like a sign from above that it's time for me to find out what the fuck I want versus like chasing money to feel secure. So I sat down, asked myself a bunch of questions that I pulled out of some books about, like, what did I love doing as a kid and what activities give me energy and what kind of people do I like hanging around and things like that. And the answer just came to me halfway through of that said, I'm here to integrate spirituality and entrepreneurship. That's it. And it was so clear to me, like, oh crap. Yeah, this is it. I just knew this is it. And that's been with me forever since, right? It's stayed true for me and been my North Star since. And that's what led me directly to the business that I have now. Cause I was like, I need to teach this to other people. I could instantly see how every other entrepreneur I knew, they were struggling with the same things, maybe not to the degree that I was, but it was the same patterns and they would benefit from learning the same things that I'd learned. So I need to go teach this to them. And then I was like, how do I do that? And so I started searching and I discovered online courses and online marketing and started doing that. And then I was like, this is great. This works, but the software sucks. You have to do, like, glue together all these different tools and make them talk to each other. Like, why don't I write software? Why don't I make something that's simpler and that's integrated? And so that's what I did. And that became Simplero, which is my business today. So Simplero was born out of coaching. And then I just got like, I say that I got busy with the software, so I stopped the coaching, but the reality was that I felt so unworthy and self-doubt and imposter and all that shit that I stopped coaching, which, you know, once I got back to it a year and a half ago, I was like, what the fuck was I doing?
Yeah.
Because that's what gives my life meaning so much more. I actually had four or five months ago, I had this thing where my heart was like, I was getting dizzy sometimes. I was like, let me go get my heart checked. I don't believe in doctors, but, you know, let me just go to an actual like heart doctor and get it checked. And as I suspected, it was completely useless. And there's like $3,000 out the window completely. Doctors don't know shit about the human body. But I came out of that meeting with that visit, just was like, this is a fucking wake up call. Like, I'll be 50 soon. If like the legacy that I want to leave is not the fucking software. I love software. Don't get me wrong. I think our software is amazing. I think what we're doing with the software is the best in the world, in our industry. But the legacy I want to leave is I want to heal the world, essentially. Like, I want to heal people. I want to be that spiritual teacher that connects people back home to themselves. That's what I fucking care about.
What's, cause I mean, a lot of your brand is based off of the value of who you've helped and what that's led to in terms of revenue. But a lot of what we're talking about, because like that's also with your tool, that's a lot like, you know, there's a direct, like, even if it's helping in the sense of like simplifying, right? And help in the sense of like bringing everything together, that's another aspect of it. Do you find a monetary, like, there's a monetary metric that people get when they help someone that's a high level business owner. But when we're talking about spirituality, it feels so much more eternal.
Yeah.
So how do you balance both of those things? Because there's going to be people that need the same help, but, and usually actually the people that need the most amount of help are not entrepreneurs. They're people that need, like, almost are like, almost unawake to their own potential. How do you balance that? Because you want to, like, you want to help the high level business people. You want to impactful people. But like, I'm sure your scope of when you say the world, it's just so much bigger than the top 1%.
Yeah. So I think there's like a couple of things. I think one of my blind spots is still playing tricks on me is that like the spirituality is not, people don't value it as much. And so I have to talk about the money and what they can make. And I mean, it's always an easy kind of sell to make if you can sell money at a discount, right? Hey, invest $1,000, you'll make 10,000, right? Like, you know, it's an easy sale to make. But I think honestly, and it's something that's been smacking me in my head lately, because I got sucked into that whole online marketing world, direct response marketing, and I kind of hate it. Like, I quit that world in 2011 because I got sucked in 2008 despite all my resistance. Cause like, I'm a programmer, I'm a tech guy. And I looked at that and I was like, this looks like such a, like, all the scammy make money online bullshit. But then I'm like, all right, let me hold my nose and buy the thing. And it turned out to be pretty great.
What did you buy? Who'd you buy?
Jeff Walker, Product Launch Formula 2.0. Okay. Yeah. Nice. In 2008. And, But quickly I was like, and Jeff, I think, is a really good dude, but a lot of the people in that world had a stench about them, right? Like, they were lying. And I had a baseball game in 2011. That was my turning point with, Tony Robbins' son, actually Jarrett Robbins, and two other guys. And he knew most of these people in real life. It was in San Diego. And I asked him, dude, like, what are they like? Like, are they seem shady to me. Are they really shady or is it just me? And he's like, oh no, they're every bit as shady as you think they are. Like, they're full of it.
Oh, really?
Like, fuck that. Oh yeah. So I was like, all right, screw that. I'm out. I don't have anything to do with that industry. But I've been kind of like sucked back in at different times. And the reality is just, I think it's just, like, there's techniques that are legit, but like the vibe of that whole world is like, is that shit. So I think it's been smacking me in my head lately of just like, no, just like, let that shit go. I don't like it. I just like, I keep, cause like, oh, maybe I should, or like, I need it, whatever. Like, all that voice. And I think that's something that a lot of people experience too. Like, well, I guess that's what you have to do to market. Like, no, you don't. So I'm just going to take a stand now and be like, no, you fucking don't. And yeah, do it differently. So yeah.
I think that people, it's so wrong for people to assume that the industry is different than any other industry or any other person. Because with every single thing in life, discernment is required. There's no, like, to say that we can absolutely trust doctors, dumb, right? There's probably going to be good doctors and there's going to be a lot of really bad ones. But there are some people that are probably going to want to help. And the same thing with politics. It's like to assume that every politician is awful. That's dumb because there's some people that are probably going to try and there's some people that are probably going to be like, and you can make arguments all. I hear
I've
experienced so many people in there and it's like, I love the fact that there's some people that are worthy of it because they're, you know, like their heart right there is good. Gary Vee is a good example of that. I think Gary Vee.
But Gary Vee is not like really a direct response marketer, right? He's a brand marketer, like first and foremost. And I agree with you. There are great people everywhere and there are awful people everywhere. I do think there's definitely certain industries that attract more awful people or that corrupt people more easily, be like Congress being one of them, right? Because Congress controls a, what is it, like $2 trillion budget or something like that. So there's a lot of money in making sure that they get them some hookers and drugs and get that on videotape. Like you can guarantee that's, and the FBI is at the top of the list. The FBI and the Mossad are at the top of the list of the people trying to, you know.
Yeah. You don't got to convince me, man. I'm in Florida. You don't got to convince me of any of that stuff. I'm right here. But you're totally right. And I think like, it's all, you can experience that in sales too. But I wish that there, it almost, oh my goodness, don't even get me started when it comes to pastors. My dad's a pastor, but like when it comes to religious leaders, it's disheartening because you want to think like with good things, doctors, you know, religious leaders, therapists, whatever it is, there's, you would hope that there's a line that would be drawn and that it would attract, but like, nope, when money is involved, corruption follows.
And you, I mean, I don't know if you saw, there's this documentary that just dropped Quiet on Set about Nickelodeon. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it. I know. I mean, of course, I got the TikTok version, right? The TikTok synopsis. That was my era of growing up watching TV too.
But you can just like, you would think that when it's children stuff, like let's make sure it's good people. But of course, like if you're a pedophile, where are you going to go? Like, what kind of line of work do you want to get into? Right. Like, you know, Boy Scout or Nickelodeon, right? Like they're like obvious. So what those industries need to do is be way more vigilant about that kind of stuff. Right.
Yeah.
But they are going to attract the bad apples. Of course they are.
So when you say you want to do it different, you want what you do and your impact to be different. What does that vision look like? What does that look like? I mean, you're telling me it's like more of a personal approach, but tell me what that looks like at scale.
For my marketing specifically?
Yeah. Yeah. And for your brand.
I think so. I think it comes down to like the whole, I was working with a guy named Louis Crigny. He has, his thing is like stand the fuck out, and he's basing his on like a jobs to be done kind of thing. And just in like, really understanding people's mindset and their beliefs, their worldview, your worldview. And so standing out by being more true to you, being different from people. Like the thing with direct response is it's like, well, what headlines are going to convert? What do we say to convert? Right. And it's like how I made $147,000 blah, blah, blah dollars and like blah, 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 like that kind of stuff. We know that. It's like there's a certain style to it. There's a certain flavor to it versus like what our people, like you're saying, our people aren't in it for the money. It's not why they come about it. So I shouldn't be talking about that, right? Mm-hmm. That, well, we can also talk about that because of course we need to make money, but it's not what drives them. None of our people, right? I was looking at Hormozy and what he's doing with school. And it's like, you know, whoever has the like most new MRR each month win, go to blah, blah, blah. And it's like the whole positioning is around like how, if I'm going to make money online, right? No, if I'm going to need, if I want to make money, what's the best strategy? It's the same with ClickFunnels, right? Russell is like, funnels, that's what you need to do. It's better than foreign exchange and better than MLM. It's better than investing in stocks. But it's like, that's the market they're in. School is the same way. Like, instead of funnels, it's just communities. But it's all about, how do I make money? And that's cool. It's great. I love it. Not our people, right? Our people are people who are like, I have something that I want to share because I went on this journey, in this inside journey, outside journey, to figure this out. I found inner peace. I found out how to create the body I want, or the relationship I want, or a business that I love with impact, or like, that's, I figure this out. I want to share that with others. Oh crap, now I have to figure out how to do that. That's a whole new thing. That's the journey we help them on. I think of it as the second hero's journey. We go on the first hero's journey and meet the enemy and the mentor and the dark night of the soul and the dark abyss and all of that stuff. And then we come back with the elixir, back to ordinary world. And then we realize, crap, now I need to figure out how to do this. And that's your second hero's journey. Same thing. Mm. I'm there to be your mentor if you want me, right? And we have people on the team that can help you and connect you with other people who are on that same journey. And but you're going to have to face your own dark abyss and dark night of the soul. And there are going to be enemies and obstructions and all that stuff. But then you will figure out how to actually get your elixir out to the people. That's what we're about.
I love that. Well, and I think something we're not even talking about, not we're not even tapping into, is the communal aspect, where it's like, there's the entrepreneur that has it. There's the entrepreneur that hosts it. But then there's all the people that are impacted and resonate with it. And that's why, genuinely, that's why I love info product space. I think you're talking about, you know, direct marketing, and maybe there's a history there that I'm not familiar with just because I happen to dive in with good people. Mm-hmm. But like, or at least the people that I consumed were better, right? Like, or at least like, at least the, like the people that got me into the space, where I think I like the first info product I consumed was probably something along, it was like probably Gary Vee. It was probably like Ryan Pineda, something like people that people that I just genuinely got value
but
from.
Gary doesn't, doesn't have any info products at all, does he?
I mean, there's books. When it comes to brand marketing, it's like, to be honest, he's just releasing it as content. Like that's,
That's
when
the
you
thing.
Dumb it down, it's just released as content. And I,
Yeah.
I wanna think it's something different, but what it really genuinely is, and it's a, you know, like Ryan Pineda, I took a free blueprint thing, and frankly, I could have taken anybody's, but it hit me at the right time in the right place, and it gave me vision when I lacked it, and I think that gave me realization that like the people that host these communities, like you, it actually does change lives. Like I, like it was as simple as an Alex Ramosi podcast like 2 years ago. And it was a 2-hour podcast with him talking to Graham Stephan, and genuinely changed the course of my life. And that was just like free content. But like, I it's interesting that like the community that exists, often people don't recognize or see, you know, we talk about money, we talk about revenue driven, we talk about, you know, what's your MRR for the community. But like, when it comes down to it, it's people, and it's like the people that are hosting these programs on your platform, it's like you don't get to actually quantify the impact of that because you're hosting community in a unique way. And I don't think we'll really be able to really understand it until probably 5 years from now, when like you see the fruit of the positive impact that these online relationships are creating.
Yeah. Hey, Grant, I just looked at the clock and I'm like late for my next.
No stress. Let's close this chair. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I appreciate your time, Calvin. So let's end it right there. Where can people connect with you? How can people talk to you? How can people work with you?
Best way to connect with me is just go to my Instagram. It's my name, at Calvin Corelli, 2 R's, 1 L. And DM me there. And then tell me you found me on the Grant Owen podcast, because I love hearing where people hear about me from. So DM me and just let me know. If you DM, I mean, you can work with me by obviously running your business on Simplero. It's like the replacing all the other tools that you're probably using now to run your business, or most of them anyway, and by far. And then yeah, if you're interested in the coaching side of things, happy to talk to you. I did record a video a few weeks ago of just because a lot of people who are starting, you started mentioning like a lot of the people on your that are listening are early in the state in the early stages or thinking about it. And so just the simple structure to build your coaching business, your info business, after everything I've seen doing this for many years and sort of my genius is making things simpler. That's why we call it the Software Simplero. Mm-hmm. So I have a video there I think it's like 15, 20 minutes or something. Just give you like, this is the simple blueprint for how to do it.
I love it. I love it.
I'll send that to you. Yeah. Keyword 10K, 10K. And then I'll send that video to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate you. Until next time, everybody. Bye.